To begin this session, I'd like to consider some objections to this belief in God and also explain what I see as the reasons why people have failed to see that this stuff requires a Christian philosophy. It makes it not only possible, but obligatory. Let's start with some objections. One of the most common ones that I hear is that the gods and goddesses of ancient Greece or Rome don't fit the definition for divinity. It's not the case that Zeus in the ancient Greek religion was supposed to have created the universe. Nor he wasn't all-knowing, he wasn't all-powerful, didn't have any of the characteristics that we think of God as having, and that's true. But that's because in those traditions, they made a distinction between what it is that's divine and gods and goddesses, which were individual beings that had more divine power than humans, but they were not per se divine. That's the way it goes. So if you think about the myths that Homer tells about the gods, it's what he calls Okeanos that's divine. That's just there. And then Okeanos begins to divide up and it generates the heavens, the earth, the gods, the humans. So everything has some divinity in it. Gods are beings that have more divinity than humans do. So it's important for us not to offend them, because they can make life miserable for us if we do. And so we butter them up and ask for favors and hope for the best or something like that. So that in that religion, they're not dealing with what is divine per se. Roman religion was the same. They called the divine noumen, and something that was that loaded with divine power was numinous. And so for different projects, work projects in Rome, they would get a priest to come bless a certain plot of land that on which they wanted to construct a big public building. They wanted to be sure that it wasn't numinous, so they didn't want to cross the divine. But they didn't worship the divine separately. The approach to the divine is only through the gods and goddesses that have more divinity than we do. That should also help make sense to you of why the Roman emperors didn't see it as a piece of insanity to claim that they were gods. They do have more noumen than the average person, right? That's why they're emperor and the average person is just an average person. So a lot of them refer to themselves as mortal gods. The other beings that we worship and talk about the temple have so much divinity in them they can never die. I, the emperor, can die, but in all other respects, I have more divinity in me, and that's why I'm superior to everybody else that I rule. So you can see the two viewpoints there, the Roman viewpoint and the Jewish and Christian one, just go right past each other. For a Jew or a Christian, it's insane for a person to say he's a god. He has more divine power than anybody else. And for the Romans, it made all kinds of sense. The divinity is in places and objects and things and people in different degrees all the time. And that's what the priests are for, to sort that out and tell us if it's okay to build this building here or not. The second thing that I want to point to is that it's not the case, I'm going to argue, it's not the case that people invent the idea of divinity. They invent specific gods, whether that's Jupiter or Zeus or Neptune or who it is. But they don't invent the idea of divinity. Something has to be divine. Let me tell you why. It's not because of a great, long, abstruse logical proof, complete with modal operators. It's not that. It's something much more obvious. The sum total of reality has to be self-existent, because there's nothing else for it to depend on. I'll give you a chance with that. I'm going to say it again. The sum total of all reality has to be self-existent, either in whole or in part, just because there's nothing else. If there's nothing for it to depend on, it doesn't depend. And one of the great differences among the world religions is that difference between in whole or in part. In Hinduism and Buddhism, it's the whole that's divine. And everything that occurs within that whole, in the created world in which we live, that appears not to be divine because it comes into being and passes away is merely illusion. The other view, that reality is in part divine, the part of the reality that's divine is God, and God calls into existence all the rest of it, which always depends on Him. That's the view held by Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. So you immediately get from this the two possible ways that the religion could be different. Two possible ways. In the way that non-divine depends on the divine, but the divine itself is not a hypothesis. Now, if this is the right definition of divinity, and it can impact theories, then I owe you an explanation as to why nobody ever tried to construct a Christian philosophy until the previous century, until the last century. Why did Christians think that wasn't a possible chore, wasn't a task they could undertake? I read to you Father Copleston's statement, so you know he's just saying, no, that doesn't make any sense. There's not a Christian biology or a Christian math, so how could there be a Christian theory of reality or theory of knowledge? And here's the reason that's got missed. I have to remove this stuff here. I think I can do this fairly simply and quickly. Philosophy begins among the ancient pagan Greeks. And they assume that it's the universe that's self-existent in part. So if this is the complete universe, they start philosophy by trying to locate what it is in that universe that is self-existent and all the rest depends on it. And this is the way they see philosophy and science proceeding. You identify what's divine, and then you trace the causal pathways to everything else, and this gives you the right explanation of reality. When Christianity comes on the scene, philosophy is already 500 to 600 years old. They've been at this for centuries. The early Christians look at this and they say, well, it can't be right that the divine is in the world. It's not. It's God. In the world. God can be present. It's no part of the universe that's divine instead of God. So they deny that. But they ask the question, why couldn't it be that something in the universe is what everything else depends on, so long as you add, and that depends on God? So you can't regard that as divine, but you could continue to regard it as what everything else in the universe depends on, and deny its divinity and claim God creates this and this creates everything else. And so that's just what they did. Now, my objection to that is that it violates Colossians chapter 1, which says that God has created all things, visible or invisible, and the only one on whom all things depend is Christ. In other words, only Jesus Christ mediates the power of God to creation. So saying that, no, it's the realm of perfections, or it's matter, or it's matter plus the perfections, or it's matter plus logical, mathematical laws, or logical, we combine materialists with Pythagoras, or whatever it is, that's all wrong. There isn't anything. Not only are we denying that any part of the cosmos is divine, is self-existent, we're denying that any part is what creates all the rest of it. There is nothing there. It all directly depends on God. And why? Because Colossians says that it's only Christ who mediates the power of God. Through Him, all things are made, visible or invisible. And He is the one that hangs all things together. That's what the Greek says. So that in-between position is what has prevented most Christians from thinking that there needs to be a distinctively Christian approach. The Eastern Orthodoxy was not fooled on this point, and St. Gregory Palamas, a theologian of the 14th century, says this: the Christian can tolerate no mediating substance between God and creatures. the absolute rejection of that ploy, that move. And yet that's the one that holds the field today among most Christians and among most Jews in philosophy. That's why the view that I'm going to be explaining to you in the other sessions was never tried before the 20th century, before Professor Dooyeweerd had tried it. I think that's probably enough to wrap up this session. You have a lot to think over and reread, and I'll try to start my next lecture with a little recap of what we've already done to get you accustomed to this. And do rewind and re-watch what you need to.